Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening and welcome. On behalf of the Tattered Cover, I'd like to thank you for your support of our independently and locally owned bookstore. We appreciate your business. Tonight's event is something of a special treat for me. I'm a serious Douglas Adams fan and even had the opportunity of hosting him for two book signing events. I have actually been at the Tattered Cover that long, many years ago. And since the first Artemis Fowl book, my son and I have been huge Owen Colfer fans. And when I found out Owen had been chosen to write the new Hitchhiker's book, I was psyched. And having read it, not disappointed. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Owen Colfer.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for coming out. My name is Owen, and I'm from Ireland, which is a small country across the sea, known for the bands U2, which is probably one of the most famous things to come out of Ireland. And I wrote the sequel to The Hitchhiker's Guide in a moment of madness. Now, what everyone asks me is, why did you do that? What possessed you to do this thing when you were so happy with Artemis Fowl and everything was going so well? Why did you do The Hitchhiker's Guide? Well, I will tell you why. Because I have a long and emotional attachment to The Hitchhiker's Guide, which started way back in 1979, which is 30 years ago. When I was 14, and it would have been actually 1980 when I got the book. And back in 1980, some of you remember, but most of you don't, younger people, it was a different time. Your parents will tell you it was all happy, everyone was watching Happy Days, there was no problems. But it was a dark time in Ireland because our TV was really bad. We just had like two stations on TV, and you had no remote control for the television. It's like the dark ages. You had to get up out of the sofa yourself and push the button with your own finger. It was terrible. Actually,
we had a knob.
You had a knob? Well, you were lucky. You were one of the lucky ones. We just had this big button you had to pound in with a hammer almost. Well, now, I tell the truth. We did have a remote control. We had the first remote control in Ireland, and it was a human remote control. My little brother, Niall, who was forced to lie on the floor in front of the TV, and we would throw stuff at his head whenever we want. We could have said, push the button, but that would be no fun. What's the fun in that? So we would throw our clothes, our shoes, our books, everything. And by the end of the evening, there would be one boy on the floor, lovely and warm, covered in clothes, and then four naked boys on the sofa. So the two programs that were on were always about the Bible and farming. And then if it was like a summer special, it would be farming in the Bible. And they would combine. And it wasn't happy. You know, goodbye. I mean, I have nothing against Bible programs. There's some really good ones. But this was not one of the good ones with cartoons and actors and stuff. This was just a really old guy with a massive, big, oversized Bible that he would read all the time. And he was very indistinct, so you didn't really know what he was saying. And sometimes he would laugh at a joke in the Bible that no one else got. Because as far as I know, there are no jokes in the Bible. So he would be, the letter from St. Paul to the... And the whole country would say, what? The best thing that ever happened on that channel was one time he turned over two pages at the same time. We laughed for about 2 weeks. And the other channel, it was farming. And not, again, not good programs, just programs, you know, here a guy in a field looking at animals and pointing at the animals and identifying the animals. This is a cow. Long silence. Oh, yes, there's another cow. And that was it. So obviously you didn't look at TV because it was rubbish. There was no kids' TV on. There was 1 hour on a Saturday morning there was cartoons that we got, and all really bad cartoons from Czechoslovakia, which were really bad. Not good cartoons. I mean, I never even saw a Spider-Man cartoon until recently. So we got all the horrible cartoons. So we didn't watch TV. And I was, you might find this hard to believe looking at me now, but I was quite small in those days and no good at sports. And none of my friends were any good at sports. And when you're a teenager, you have to have something. You need something that makes you better than everybody else. And our thing was fantasy books. We read the big, thick fantasy books and use them to act all superior to the sporty guys. We would say to them, "You probably don't even know where Mordor is." If I put three rings in front of you, you wouldn't even know which was the one true ring. And of course, we didn't say that till they were gone, because they'd be big beefy guys. So anyway, we were reading these books, and into this world of big fantasy books came a guy called Ted. Now, Ted was the only cool guy in our group. He was cool for one reason, well, two reasons. And well, it was one reason really, but there was two of them. He had two girlfriends. Now, none of us had girlfriends at all, ever. We could not comprehend that you could have two girlfriends. How did that even work? In a tiny town, you could fit all of the inhabitants of Wexford in this room, and they didn't know about each other, and they were sisters. How did that happen? No, they weren't sisters. They weren't sisters. That's a joke. But he did have two girlfriends, and they were they were called Grania, was one of the girlfriends, which is an old Irish name, and the other one was Margaret and Grania, and they never knew about each other. So whatever Ted said, basically, we did, because obviously he knew what he was talking about. So if Ted told us to go down and lie in the middle of the road and don't get up until four trucks run over you and they have to be red, we would run off and lie down, believing we would get two girlfriends out of this. Of course, it never happened. But one day Ted came to us and he said, "I have a book for you." And we said, "No, Ted, it's tiny. We need big books for the weekend when we don't go out. We need the big book." And he said, "No, I have this little tiny book, but it's amazing. It's the best book I've ever read." And so I took it because Ted said it was good and he was cool. So I took this little tiny book, and I didn't think it was going to be any good because it was small, and also because it said on the back, "Vogons destroy the earth, one guy survives, a lone hero." And I thought, oh, this is such a ripoff of Star Wars. I said, this is going to be real rubbish. And so I went home to the bathroom. I know you can't say toilet in America, I've realized. You have to say restroom, because I don't know why that is. Toilet is illegal. It's one of the questions they ask you in immigration. What is that? And if you say toilet, you're out of the country. So yeah, you have to say it's a restroom, and they go, "Okay, get in there." So I don't know why that is, although as a teacher I know that boys especially do tend to rest in there during math. They go in there. We have guys every day, "Take out your math book," 10 hands go up. "Can we go to the toilet?" "Oh, sorry, restroom." No. So I'm not. Don't start me talking about the boys' bathrooms in a school, because I can talk about that for about an hour and it's just disgusting. Well, let me just tell you a few things about that, okay? First of all, why is it that the floor is sticky all the time? Why is that? Why do the pipes rust out every 3 months? I don't know. Why? It never happens in the girls' restroom, only in the boys' restroom. I don't know why. Why are boys so proud of going to the bathroom? Why is it such a big... If you're teaching in a school and a girl wants to go to the bathroom, okay? A girl wants to go... Sorry, restroom. And you're the teacher. The girl is very sensible about this. She doesn't want to talk about it with everybody. She doesn't even want to say the words aloud. So she would put up her hand maybe here. She won't say anything. If she's desperate to go, she might do this. And eventually the teacher, me, I would say, "Yes." And she would say, and you would say, and she would go away. And she would slide off. And then maybe 5 minutes later, she would slip back. And no one will even know she's gone. If a boy wants to go to the restroom, he thinks this is a matter of national importance. And his hand shoots up. And he goes, he won't even bother with a full sentence. He will just say the noun, bathroom! And then he will go and knock everything over all the way in and bash his friends, kick over, probably set fire to the school, and come back 20 minutes later when... I don't know why I'm telling you any of this. This is just a personal rant, and you don't deserve it, and I'm going to move on. Okay. Oh, yeah, I lock myself in the bathroom with the Hitchhiker's Guide. Now, I know that sounds selfish in a house of five brothers to lock yourself in the one bathroom, but it's very practical, and I'll tell you why. Because my brothers used to take my books and they would tear out the last two pages and then they would ransom the pages back to you. And if you couldn't come up with the money, then they might go into the bathroom themselves with the pages, and I'm not going to tell you what happened then. So I couldn't have Cool Ted's book ripped apart, so I went into the bathroom, sat down, locked the door and read it. And it was The Hitchhiker's Guide. And of course, it was absolutely unbelievable. And I just couldn't believe what I was reading. The reason for this, okay, first of all, I'd just like to register a complaint. I thought there'd be no kids here, and I was really looking forward to swearing. Now, I can't swear, because there's kids here. So I'm sorry about that, but I just wanted to get out. They're not old enough. There's a couple of very small ones. I will just say bleep instead of swearing, okay? I'll have to use an Irish word that nobody understands. But no, I better not, because it sounds very like the English word, and you might guess what it means. Now, so where was I? Oh, yeah. So why was I so amazed by this book? Well, I'll tell you why. I've been reading fantasy and sci-fi now for, I'm 44 years old, so I suppose 34 years, okay? And in all that time, a pattern emerges, and it's a good pattern, but it's always very serious. There's always a quest involved, and there's a magic thing. So there's a guy who's working in a stable who's actually a prince, whose father went missing. He's got a tattoo of a dragon's arse on his shoulder. He goes off to a mountain. He sees the dragon. He puts his tattoo in the rock. A sword pops out. He stabs the dragon in the eye, and the dragon craps out his missing dad. So there, that's the general pattern of fantasy. There's no jokes in it. No, I swore twice there, didn't I? Sorry. I see no one is really shocked except you. You're okay, aren't you? Oh, that's fine. Now, I decided, when I read Douglas Adams, I realized you can put jokes in sci-fi fantasy. You don't have to be so worthy and earnest all the time. Now, I like worthy and earnest, don't get me wrong, but you can put jokes in there, and sometimes that is a better way to make your point. And so that's what I did. I started to write fantasy with jokes. And I did it for a long time until about 10 years ago, I wrote a book called Artemis Fowl. And that was the one that took off for me. But I would never even have written that book if I hadn't followed on with The Hitchhiker. Now, meantime, I was following The Hitchhiker. And every time a book came out, I would buy it and also go back and read the other books. And I found coming towards the end they got a little dark, especially the last book. And this I found out recently was because Douglas Adams didn't want to write the last book, but he had to because he'd signed the deal. And so they had to lock him in a hotel room with his agent, and literally he would pass pages under the door. And the only way you could get him to finish the book was to say, okay, you can kill everybody. And then you never have to write another one ever again. They're all dead. Now, meanwhile, I'm reading this book. I don't know that. And I'm reading, I'm really excited. There's a big chase scene. And I thought the fourth one was a bit gloomy. And then the fifth one was funny again. And it's back and they're great and they're running towards the earth. They're going to save the earth. And then I turn over the page and everyone is dead. And I'm like, what? You can't just kill everybody at the end of five books just like that. You don't even lead up to it. It's not even heroic. They're just dead. But apparently he could. So, and he did. And so we all had a little sob, all those hitchhikers. But we got used to it. And we said, okay, I suppose he is the writer. He can do what he wants. And Douglas retired The Hitchhiker and he started to write Dirk Gently, who was a brilliant detective. And that was great. But after a few years, Douglas decided that, you know what, that was a bit cruel. I'm going to do one more Hitchhiker and finish it off nicely. Well, maybe not nicely, but in, you know, a more upbeat note. And six is a good number. So one more, and that's it, to finish up all the stories. So the first thing he had to do, obviously, was explain how come all his characters were alive that he just killed. And he did that by saying, well, actually, if you read the end of the book, you don't see anybody being killed. You just see Arthur closes his eyes, and then you go to the ship, and the Earth is destroyed. But you don't see them dying, or so I could bring him back. And how he did it was, now if you're a Hitchhiker fan, you'll understand this. Everyone in the Hitchhiker has a little fish in their ear, the Babel fish, that is a translator. And in times of danger, Douglas said, this Babel fish will transport them to somewhere safe. And that's what happened. And he did a little radio show about that. Now, that won't work for a novel, because every time there's danger, they will all disappear. And so all the drama is gone. And really, it didn't work for the last five novels either, if you think about it. But Douglas was always doing stuff like that, and he would just say, well, it's a slightly different universe. So I couldn't start from that point, because that didn't work for a book. Because for that to work, then to put someone in danger, you would have to sneak up behind them with a plunger, get the fish out of their ear, and then shoot them. So that doesn't really. Although it would be funny, I think it probably would make the book a little difficult to write. So I did it a different way, and that was my. Anyway, so Douglas decides he's going to write the book, and we all go, woo, great, we can't wait for this to happen. And he said, yes, I'm going to write it. It's coming soon. 6 years later, no book, but he's still going to write it. And then he died very suddenly on a treadmill in California when he was jogging on the treadmill at the tragically young age of 49. He wasn't even 50. And he wasn't really out of shape or anything. He was just this guy, you know, and I suppose he had a heart problem that he didn't know about.
He was seated elsewhere in the universe.
He was, maybe his babelfish took him off and transported him to, someone cruelly said last night, it was very cruel, that just before he died, my agent had sent him a copy of my book to get a quote, and they reckon that could have killed him. But I'm not taking responsibility. I think that's highly unfair that they would blame me for that. But anyway, so we were all sad, very sad for a while. And, you know, and every now and then you would go back and read your Hitchhiker books. And it became one of those things from your youth. Kids, you don't know about this yet. But when you, between the ages 18 or maybe 16 and 25, you collect a few things that will remain special to you for the rest of your life. And this would be books, a few books, some music. I mean, I guarantee you now, every one of the grown-ups sitting here today has a band that they know in their souls are rubbish, but they still listen to them because they used to listen to them when they were 18. And so they still put this band on. I mean, I love the band Queen. Right, and I know their last five albums are rubbish. I know they're terrible, but I still listen to them all because their first 10 albums were amazing. So I forgive them the last five. I'm sure they don't care whether I forgive them or not. But, or it could be a movie. For example, I love the movie Highlander. I totally adore that movie. It's one of my favorite movies. But think about it. Think about it. Sean Connery is playing an Egyptian in a Scottish accent in Scotland. So, and Christopher Lambert, the French man, is playing a Scottish guy. Why did they not swap those two around? But it was, if you haven't seen Highlander, it's an amaze, and it has the best villain in movie history, the Kurgan. What are you nodding for? You haven't seen that, have you? You're not supposed to watch that yet. There's head chopping and stuff in that. Obviously, you weren't affected. That's not a little hedger bouncing up and down there, is it? No, it's a tennis ball. Okay. But anyway, I love that movie, even though I know, really, it's not the best movie ever made. And you can see the wires at the end when Christopher Lambert is getting the thing and he's spinning around going, oh! And you can see these wires, and they tried to hide the wires by putting electricity on them. So it's too... Anyway, let's not talk about that. And they did four sequels that were total rubbish.
There should have been only one.
Yeah.
Well, and you know they're remaking that now, but that could be good. No, it could be good if they put a lot of budget into it. It could be good. I'm. They get a real Scottish guy to do the Scottish to do. No, I bet you Sean Connery will do it. They'll bring him back. He'd be like 97. He'd be leaning on the sword like a walking stick. There can be money penny. So I don't know where I was in my story now. Oh yeah, so everybody has in their life a few things, and I'm sure some embarrassing things if we were to talk about it, and maybe we will later because it's a good subject, that we collect golden moments. Now, The Hitchhiker is one of mine, and that happens to be the one that is genius. And I've things like David Bowie. I love David Bowie. Rush, the Canadian rock band. I love Rush. I love the movie Highlander. I love Terry Pratchett. And these are all things I started in my teen years and that became special to me. And Hitchhiker was one of those things. So when I heard Douglas had died, and I was a writer, and we didn't know what would happen in the end of his characters, I made up a way, just for fun, to bring them back. And I never wrote it down or told anyone about it. It was just 20 minutes while I was too lazy to write Artemis Fowl. I just thought, what would I do? And then, last year, I got this phone call from my agent. Now, I was expecting a phone call, because I had just sent in a manuscript. But I said, she said, hello, I said, hello. And she said, shut up. And that's unusual. Because, you know, I pay her salary. So it's unusual for her to tell me to shut up. And not like in that California, you may like, shut up. This was actually, shut up. Stop talking, shut up. So I shut up. And she said, something has come into the office. And I said, is it the Terminator or something that you're... that you're saying shut up to me? And she said, no, it's an offer. They want you to do the sixth book in the Hitchhiker's Guide series. And I thought this was hilarious because, first of all, it shouldn't be done, I thought. And second of all, I'm just a kid's writer. What will I be doing? Who wants me to do this? And she said, Douglas's wife wants you to do it, and Douglas's daughter. And that was really hard to say no to. I said, well, I'm going to think about this for a week. I'm not going to say no again straight away. And next time you call, don't say shut up. You better send me a nice basket of fruit or something. So they call back in a week. And by that time, I had already made up the story. I had dragged the story out of the back of my head and had written it down. So I was kind of... I decided to do it. And so I went ahead and did it and immediately started to worry, because as soon as it was announced that I was doing it, there was a huge outcry on the internet. If you can have an outcry on the internet, but there was. I couldn't hear it, obviously, so I went on my website and all these people were going, you know, blah, 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 you this, who the hell are you, blah, 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 bleep, 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 bleeper, bleeper. And they weren't saying bleepy bleeper, I'm telling you. So I decided I'm not looking at the internet anymore. I'm going to do this book and I'm not even going to look at the internet. And luckily, my four brothers decided it was their duty to keep me informed about what was going on. So they would call me up and said, hey, did you see this guy? And he said you were a total bleep, bleep, bleeper. I would say, thank you. And then they would start throwing stuff in. Hey, he said you're a bleepy bleeper and give your brother some money. So eventually I decided to cut off the internet altogether except Facebook. Which I have a Facebook page, so most people have Facebook. Now, for the elderly among us, a Facebook is not a book with big print that you put close to your face so you can read it. It is an electronic site on the interweb. And I was on it one day, and I wasn't taking any messages. All I was doing was whatever, I forget, getting in contact with some friend. And you know the side of Facebook, you can get invited to join societies. Just totally random. It could be, you know, do you like Highlander? And it'd be, of course, yes, of course. Do you like Zac Efron? So this society came up and it said, please join the society to stop Owen Colfer writing the sequel to The Hitchhiker's Guide. And I thought, holy God, there is no escape. So I joined the society. And first of all, initially, my intention was to defend myself, you know, to say, he's not a bad guy, and, you know, I think that hair makes him look distinguished, that kind of thing. But then I thought, this is boring. And so I started to agree. And yes, he is a bleepity bleeper. And what's more, he only has one leg. His other leg is made of toffee, and he licks it all the time. It's horrible. And I made up really horrible stuff about myself. Well, I say made up. Some of it was true. But it was for about 3 hours I went on this site, and I was totally giving myself a hard time. And it was the most fun I've ever had. Because I realized how easy it is, and how it's no one's accountable, and how it doesn't mean anything. And all these guys are just sitting at home, you know, possibly waiting for a mother to let him out of the basement. And just, I hate him, they call for guy. I got a load of friends after that. All these people came on and said, that was funny, that was great, well done. And they kind of turned the tide. So that was one thing that stopped me worrying. But the real one was my wife, Jackie. There's a character called Zaphod Beeblebrox in The Hitchhiker's Guide. Most of you probably know that. Who's read The Hitchhiker's Guide, by the way? Okay, one hand will do, sir. Who hasn't read The Hitchhiker's Guide? Are you? What? You read that now. We're going to all follow this person home and make sure she reads it. Now, don't make me ask you what the last book you read was. I won't ask you that, but you got to read The Hitchhiker's Guide, the first one. Anyway, I was in the kitchen. I was moping, like most men. I mope, and that means you have to ask me what's wrong with me, and then I will heroically refuse to tell you, and then you will have to ask me again. And then that way, I will be, you know, you will be dragging it out of me, and I won't be weak looking for help. That's the man thing. That's how I was raised. Never show your weakness. Always disguise it in humor. I'll give you an example. The Irish men are raised to show their affection through sarcasm and casual violence. That's how we do. If you're wondering what casual violence is, you don't have to look. You just hit them. Do you know they're there? Shut up. I'll give you an example. And what's more, we appreciate it. If someone gets us, we say, a good one. I came home to my brother's wedding, and I had been in an accident, so I had an eye patch on because my retina had slipped, and I was in a cast and a sling. And I was in Africa, and I came home 4,000 miles. I had to get 3 planes, a bus and a train, to get to that wedding. And I looked like hell. You know, I'd been traveling for 3 days, and I kind of limped with my patch and my... This is a bit unfortunate. I didn't know, but still, I did have the patch. I'm not making it up. So I was there, and I was sweating. My hair was all over the place. I had 3 days' beard, and my brother Paul, who was getting married, I thought he's going to be so happy to see me. He came running down the avenue, and he stopped in front of me and said, listen, would you stay out of the photos? Because... And I thought, good one. So, what was I talking about before that? Oh, yes. So I'm in the kitchen moping. And I'm going, oh, ho, ho, ho. And my wife said, what? I said, oh, nothing. Don't worry about me. Don't worry about me. No. She said, what is that? And I said, well, Jackie, my darling, you probably know I'm writing The Hitchhiker's Guide. She said, oh, are you really? Is that what you're doing out there? And I said, yes, that's what I'm doing. And I said, well, in that book, there's a character called Zaphod Beeblebrox, and he has 2 heads. And she said, yes. And she said, well, I'm thinking of removing one of the heads. It's going to cause great controversy. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for that, but the head has to come off. And she just looked at me and said, I have to pick up the kids. And I realized then I was being a little bit stupid and worrying about stuff that didn't actually exist in the world. And I kind of stopped worrying about it then and got on with writing the book. And here it is. And another thing. And I will give you a brief synopsis of the story, and then maybe we can take as many questions as we have time for. We should have time. About the questions... I'm Irish, so if you ask me a question, I will talk for about 20 minutes, but I possibly won't answer the question that you asked me. But anyway, yeah, what was it? Oh, yes. So the story. When the Earth blows up, Arthur and Ford and Trillian and Random are saved by a character called Wowbagger. Now, it's a little more complicated than that, but just the easy version. And Wowbagger, who is known as Wowbagger the Infinitely Prolonged, you may remember, he travels the galaxy, the universe, insulting people in alphabetical order. That's his job. So he would land, he landed and he called, he came to insult the planet Earth. Because now he's just doing whole planets. And he was disgusted to find the planet Earth had just blown up in every dimension, and he's traveled all this way. And so he stops and picks up all the hitchhikers, and he's happy to see that Zaphod Beeblebrox is there, because he hasn't insulted him yet, and he's someone he's been looking for a long time. So he insults Zaphod terribly, and Zaphod is terribly insulted and vows to kill Wowbagger. Just casually says, "I will kill you." And Wowbagger says, "Really?" Because he's wanted to die for thousands of years. He's immortal. And Wowbagger, or Zaphod, said, "Yes, I will kill you." And Ford says, "Well, if he promises to kill you, will you save us from these death rays that are all around us?" And he says, "I will." And Zaphod says, "I know who can kill you. My friend Thor, who I used to manage when he was a rock star. I will get him with the hammer, and he will come and kill you." And Wowbagger says, "That's fantastic. Where will we meet up?" And Ford says, "Why don't we meet up on the last colony of Earthlings?" And Arthur said, "There's the last colony of Earthlings?" He said, "Yes, because Zaphod sold them a planet 10 years previously. There was a colony of Earthlings living in Ireland who believed that just before Armageddon, a spaceship would come down and collect them and bring them off to heaven." Does that sound familiar at all? It should. Anyway, so there they are, being led by Hillman Hunter, who's an Irish evangelist property developer. And Zaphod arrives and says, "Hey, it's me. I'm the alien with the spaceship. I'm going to bring it to the planet, and all it will cost you is all the money and jewelry you have." So they take him up, and he brings him to the planet, and they move in there. And Zephyr said, "Well, that was easy. I'm going to do that again." So he goes back to another dimension, gets exactly the same people, brings them back to the planet, and now there's two groups of almost identical people, and of course, they're going to start fighting. And it's, of course, it's a religious war. One group are tauromancers. That means they worship cheese. I am not making that up. There is a sect called tauromancy, and they read the future, and they think cheese is divine. I mean, cheese is divine on a cracker, but it's... Yeah. The other group have no god, because God, our God, or your God, didn't build this planet. It was obviously built by the Magrathians. And so they put an advertisement in Woohoo magazine for a god. And all the gods come then to do interviews for the position of God. I just like the idea of Cthulhu sitting in a chair and him and Hunter saying to him, "So, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?" And so... the Earthlings are on Nano. The gods are going to Nano. Wowbagger is going to Nano with all the hitchhikers. Zaphod has gone to Asgard to get Thor, and they're going to Nano. And of course, the Vogons have seen the advertisement in Woohoo! So they're going to Nano, and there's going to be a huge comic showdown. Not like Quentin Tarantino showdown, but a funny showdown there involving... major sheep who offer themselves to be eaten, and a lot of cheese. So so that's basically a summary of the story. And as you can probably guess, it's a little bit lighter in tone than the last Hitchhiker, which I think was what Douglas wanted to do. Okay, thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.